Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about understanding the teenage world that is often so confusing and unknowable to those adults who care for them, parents, grandparents, teachers. Tonight we talk about Intentions, the name of a book which opens us up to the inner world of our teenage daughters and sons. Tonight we talk about intentions, living a life based on intentionality. With me this evening to talk about this insight into the teenage world is my guest, Deborah Heiligman, author of Intentions. Deborah Heiligman, who grew up in Allentown, is the author of more than 30 books for children and teens. Her book, Intentions, is the winner of the Snyder Taylor Award for Teen Readers. It's a pleasure to welcome to the studios of WDIY, Deborah Heiligman.
Hi, so happy to be here talking to you.
And this was a wonderful book. How did you come to write about this book, Deborah?
Well, I've actually been gestating this book for about 2 decades, believe it or not. I was bringing up my sons, and during the time of the Monica Lewinsky affair with President Clinton, my sons started asking questions, and I remembered back to the time in my childhood when I realized that the world was not black and white and that it was a messy place and that sometimes grown-ups did bad things, and what a huge jolt that was to my sense of well-being. And I saw my sons experiencing that a little bit, and so I started thinking about how I could write about this for children.
Well, you know, you mentioned a very interesting concept, and that is that our not only our children, I guess we all would like to see the world operate in one way, and that when we talk about in churches and synagogues living the good life, that we want everyone to be good, particularly our parents and teachers and our church representatives, church and synagogue representatives.
Absolutely.
We don't want to see any failures or imperfections. We want everybody to be quote unquote perfect. And is that something that you found with your sons?
I mean, I think that maybe they don't. We don't want everybody to be perfect, but in my family, I think we have this sense of sort of justice or right and wrong and things. Things should make sense. I think maybe that's how we think about it. And my sons and I and my husband, I think we all have this sense that people should make sense, events should make sense, people should do what is expected of them. And, you know, as you just said, that just doesn't really happen. And, you know, when your kids are young and your president is doing things that maybe you don't like, or you know, when I was young, adults in my life did things that just didn't make sense to me. I spent a lot of time thinking about, well, then how do you incorporate that into your worldview and then keep going? When you find out maybe a family secret, or you know that your mother takes the ice cube out with her hands, not with the scoop, when your father isn't looking. You know, I mean, oh my gosh!
Well, that's a small one.
Yeah,
we can negotiate, but you know, it is the little things, and it also points to the bigger things in life. Now, we're talking about this book, which is a book about a teenage girl. She's what? She's six. Is she 15 or 16?
She's 15, not quite 16 when the book opens up. And in fact, I don't really give her a birthday in the book.
Right.
But she's just not quite 16. She's not quite driving yet, although that does come into play in the book. And she's growing up in a small town in Pennsylvania.
And we won't name the town.
No, there is no name.
Right. It could be any town in Pennsylvania. Exactly. And she's doing well in school, but she is struggling. She comes to find a struggle within herself when she comes to the temple and discovers what?
Yes, and I just want to make a slight correction to you earlier. You said, I don't remember what you said exactly, but it won the Sidney Taylor Award, which is an award given out by Jewish librarians for the best Jewish books of the year. And I just have to say that right now up front, because what I'm about to say may make you wonder what the Jewish librarians thought about the book, and thank goodness they understood it and they loved it. Because what happens in Chapter 1, so this is not a spoiler, is that Rachel's parents are fighting. They're having an early dinner because she has confirmation class that night, which is the sort of the post-bar bat mitzvah class that a lot of synagogues run. And so her parents are fighting, and she runs out of the house just sick of their fighting because they've been fighting a lot lately, even though they never used to. And so she runs to the synagogue hoping that maybe she'll see the rabbi whom she adores, who she thinks of as the most perfect human being on the planet. And maybe she'll get to go talk to him, and maybe she'll work up the courage to ask him about her parents and what to do about her parents. Because, in fact, another part of her world isn't doing so well, and her best friend is sort of become too cool for school and is treating her not so well. And so she goes to the temple, and her rabbi, she doesn't see her rabbi anywhere, so she just goes and sits in the sanctuary without turning on the lights. She loves that room. It's a room where a lot of, you know, good, happy things and sad things have happened to her. And she's sitting there. And then should I tell what happens?
Well, that's up to you.
my editor used to say, well, we started with a bang. She overhears her rabbi having sex in the sanctuary. And needless to say, this shocks her beyond belief, and she sneaks out of the sanctuary so he doesn't know that she's in there. He and this person don't know that she overheard this. And that is how the book starts.
And that leads her to disillusionment with the rabbi who is her confirmation teacher,
ma'am,
and whom she really has looked up to and respected.
Yes.
And she is unable to cope with that.
Right, exactly.
And which leads we see that adults not only have a problem with sexuality, and you go on to explore Rachel's own exploration with sexuality, wanting to have a meaningful relationship and yet being caught in the everyday world where her friends are engaging in behavior that she doesn't like.
Right, right, and that she has sort of resisted up until now but is now kind of drawn to because, you know, it's sort of like, what the heck?
Right.
You know, if the person I think is the most perfect human being on the planet, the person that I respected the most in the world is doing this bad and awful thing, then, well, why shouldn't I? And she, you know, when you write a book, obviously you sort of take what happens in real life and you make it more dramatic. So I just kept throwing things at poor Rachel to just upset her equilibrium. So not only are her parents fighting at home, not only has the rabbi done this horrible thing, you know, not only is her best friend treating her like dirt, she's also getting a little bit confused about love and sex, and then there's the pot-smoking incident, and then I just kept throwing things at her because I think that's what it feels like to be a teenager.
I think you're absolutely right, and very often we as parents want to protect our children and want to protect our teenagers, and we don't want them to go through that, but that's not the reality. And
exactly.
The reality of our teenagers growing up today is much more difficult, I have to say, than even though I thought when I was growing up it was difficult. It's not the same, and we're deluged with sensuality and drugs and alcohol. We have all kinds of things that are coming at teenagers today that we didn't necessarily have with the intensity. Certainly, when I was growing up, I don't know about your growing up, Deborah.
Well, my growing up was pretty intense. You know, I grew up, I was born in the late 50s, and so the 60s had a really strong impact on me. I mean, I was a little bit younger than, you know, sort of the hippie age, but those were my friends' older brothers and sisters, and not so much my older brother and sister, but because they were much older. Maybe I'm going to be a little bit of an optimist here. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful.
But, you know, when I had a very close relationship with my parents, but I couldn't talk to them the way that I think my kids could talk to me and my husband, and they still do. And I watch this a lot. I think somehow, even though there's a lot being thrown at kids today, it seems to me that parents are sometimes too involved in their kids' lives, but are more involved in the kids' lives and maybe even more aware. And I think probably we have the internet to thank for that and all the social media. And I feel like even though a lot of things are being thrown at kids, there are a lot of great resources out there for parents and for kids themselves. And I kind of think I wanted my book, you know, it was a creative endeavor. I didn't mean for it to be a helping aid, but I think my book can actually help open dialogue between kids and their parents.
I think that's well said. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life, and this is your host, marriage and family therapist Elena Bobrow. And my guest this evening is Deborah Heiligman, who is the author of a very interesting, compelling book called Intentions, which deals with the struggles, the inner struggles of a teenage girl growing up in She's growing up in Pennsylvania, isn't she?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And as we said earlier, we're not mentioning the community, and who is struggling with how to live her life with the Hebrew word is kavanah, with intentionality.
Yes.
And this is a very big struggle. And this is really what we all want for ourselves and our children. Wouldn't you say, Deborah?
Yes, it is. It very much is. I think, I'm speaking at Lehigh tomorrow, and the title of my talk is Writing and Living with Intention. And this has been a theme for me for the past few years, really since I started finishing this book. As I said, I've been working on it for 2 decades, and I sold it to a publisher, and my editor and I have been working on it for a number of years, and I even wanted to get a tattoo, which I would never do, too old, but that said Kavanah, on my wrist or something, because I feel like that it's so important to live our lives with intention, to be present in our moment, every moment. You know, it's almost a Buddhist kind of a feel. I don't know much about Buddhism, but I feel like it is. But it's just that feeling that everything I do with presence of mind, with awareness, and with intention. And it's a very hard goal to achieve, but I think it's a really worthwhile goal, don't you?
I understand what you're meaning, but what you're saying is to be present in every moment.
Yes.
And to really be aware of what you believe and think is right and just and appropriate for the moment.
Yes.
So that you are really being very thoughtful.
Yes, yes.
And which is overriding the impulse to do something,
right?
And this is really what the book is about, and the struggle of Rachel, your lovely young teenager, to do the right thing, and her struggle with her peers, who are not always struggling to
right,
do the right,
right
thing. And that's the world we live in.
Right. There's one scene in the book. I don't want to give anything away. But there's one scene in the book when she's at a party.
Yes.
And she's very tempted by somebody.
Yes.
Right? And every time I wrote that scene, you know, I said to her, Rachel, don't do that. Don't do that. Stop. Act with intention. And she even sort of jokes to herself, boy, I'm really acting with kavanah. I really, yeah. You know, because she's just going off the rails and she kind of knows it. But later on in the book, she realizes that she's not happy doing that. She really does want to live with intention. Doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes and do the wrong thing sometimes,
Go ahead. We're going to talk more about your wonderful book, Intentions, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening, we're talking to an author, Deborah Heiligman, who has written a book called Intentions about an adolescent girl growing up in today's world who is struggling to live her life in a way that is responsible and dedicated to doing good. And yet, she's in a struggle. She's in a struggle because she's so disappointed with the adults that she finds around her. Would you say that's a good description, Deborah Heiligman?
Yes, I would say it's a perfect description.
And although it's written for teenagers, I feel it's written for parents as well. All of us dealing with teenagers struggle with trying to relate and talk sensibly to our teenage children. Although they don't consider themselves children.
Right.
They are our young adults growing up. And I think you make a very very strong presentation for helping us to understand the inner struggles that go on in the teenage mind. And for example, Rachel, who is the heroine of our story, she struggles with the inequities that she sees in life.
Yeah.
The disappointments in her mom's behavior, her dad's behavior, the rabbi's behavior, and her friend's behavior. She's disappointed. And then you raise the question, if we're so disappointed, how does that help us? How can we live the life that we know we want to live with that disappointment?
Right.
And that anger.
Right.
So how do you cope with that, Deborah?
Well, you know, it's a constant struggle, I think, isn't it? I think we can look around at the world and we can either feel very frustrated and angry and disappointed, or we can look around at the world and we can say, what's my place in it and how can I help it to be a better place? And I think that, you know, when I was writing the book, I thought a lot about what could get Rachel on the right path. And it would be some bad things and some good things, I think, you know, some negative pushes and some positive pushes. And I thought that one thing that would be good, and it would be, you know, good advice for any real person, would be to get outside of yourself a little bit. And so I, you know, I'm the master of my universe when I write a book.
Yes.
So I created a volunteer job for her.
Yes.
In the reading lab at a local poor elementary school. And I have to say that this was based in large part on a wonderful experience that I had back when I lived in Pennsylvania as an adult. I grew up in Pennsylvania and then I lived there in Bucks County for 18 years as an adult. And I visited a school, an elementary school called Union Terrace in Allentown. And I had such a great time there, and I connected with the reading teacher. And then a couple years later, when my kids were older, I started to volunteer in her reading program there because it's such a wonderful program. And so when I was writing the book, when I was writing Intentions, I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if Rachel had that experience of volunteering in a reading program and actually helping somebody else. And so I gave her that experience.
And you call that part tikkun olam, changing,
right.
Changing the world.
Repairing the world. Right.
For a better place to
live. Exactly. And that is a very important Jewish philosophy that we should all try to repair the world. And I think when you're a teenager, and I hope it lasts for your whole life, you're idealistic, right? And so I was very idealistic as a teenager, and I really thought that what I did could make a difference. And I think it really can. And, you know, it's just one person. If you can help one person, you're helping to repair the world. And so And I don't make it easy for Rachel in working with Randy. Things don't go so completely easily because this is a book. And as I said before in the first half of the show, I threw as much trouble at her as I possibly could. But
that's realistic, Deborah, because life isn't easy.
Yeah.
To do good, and we want to do things to change the world for a better place. And sometimes our best intentions are a struggle, but we need to keep up with it, and that's what you share.
That's right. That's right.
And this was a beautiful part of the book, Tikkun Olam, Changing the World for a Better Place, her experiences with this boy who was not able to read, and she has success with him.
Yes, she does.
And she does change his life forever. And he's able to go on, we hope, and
yes,
live a better life, even though his life changes terribly.
That's right. That's right.
You have another concept of one is Tikkun Olam, changing the world for a better place, where she does volunteer work.
Right.
And then there's another concept of making amends, and that's
right,
a key concept.
It's atonement, right?
Atonement.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is a real struggle for her.
Well, and because we haven't really talked about the big bad thing that she does in the book, which I think maybe we won't explicitly name, but
let's just say, Deborah, without giving the plot away, but we were talking about making amends, and this is very hard to do. Do you want to talk a little bit about the struggle?
Right. Well, so she, like I said, I don't want to give away what she does, but she's so thrown off by what she overhears in the sanctuary, and she's so unsettled by her parents fighting, and her grandmother is not doing so well, and her best friend does something very mean to her, and she gets back at her best friend in kind of an awful way. And the line from the book that that they put on the jacket copy, which I was very happy they did, is, "What if the person you respect the most disappoints you beyond belief? What if that person is you?" And so Rachel starts to realize that that thing that she did, two bad things that she did, she's disappointed herself so much. She's so mad at herself. And for a while she thinks that it's this one's fault or that's one's fault, and then she realizes that she has to take responsibility for herself. It's up to her to fix it. And I think that's a really hard thing to come to terms with. How often are we in a fight with a friend or a spouse or a loved one, and we just think, oh, he was so or she was so mean or this or that, and then at some point you realize, I think maybe I had something to do with it.
And the struggle is to be right.
Yes.
The struggle that we have in all of these arguments is, I am right. Look how mean she was, he was. Look how mean they were. And I have to do something to show that I'm not going to let them get away with the meanness.
Right.
As opposed to finding a way to live in a world with kavanah, with intention.
Right.
To live up to our own philosophy. And that's the struggle that she has.
Right. One of the biggest thing I had to do in this book, I'm talking a lot about the writing of it, which I love to do, was she has this best friend, and I've always referred to her as the mean best friend, and my editor and I worked a lot with how to make it believable that Rachel would be friends with her in the first place, how to make us agree with Rachel that she was, did bad things to her, but also how to see Alexis's side in some way. Because really, everybody's a complex, complicated person, and nobody's just purely evil or purely good. And I think it's Rachel seeing that Alexis is in pain that helps her, again, get outside of herself and starts her on the road to making amends with her and with other people in the book.
And that she doesn't want to be responsible for the pain.
Right.
It's one thing when you see a friend is in pain, and it's something going on in their family. But when you have a personal responsibility in that pain, that is a different story.
And it takes
a great deal of courage to make amends in that place.
Yeah.
And you have given Rachel strength, and she sees herself in a better light, and she's able to cope with herself in a better light, because she's resolved to use and to live her life with intentionality.
Right.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience, and no one can forgive her. She can't go to It is not a question of going to religious services and asking God for forgiveness. It's
right.
A question of making personal atonement and making amends to that friend for whatever she did.
Well, I think, and that's the Jewish way of atonement. I learned when I was researching for this book. I mean, I guess I grew up knowing that, but I wasn't sure about it. Is that the way you're supposed to atone is that first you're supposed to go to the person who you've hurt or harmed, and you're supposed to ask that person for forgiveness with complete kavanah, with no, you know, bull anywhere. Just really like, I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry I hurt you. Please forgive me. And then with any luck, that person will forgive you. But even if that person doesn't, if you've been completely sincere in asking for forgiveness, then you can ask, if you believe in God for forgiveness. And I think that, so Rachel does that.
The relationships with her parents, who had tried to understand her and who are going through their own problems. How did you find that? And was that helpful in raising your own sons?
When I was writing the book, I just, you know, I worked on it for so long that I really felt I knew Rachel's parents so well, and I was just inside of her mother's skin and her father's skin so much of the time that I was also really seeing things from their point of view, even though that's not in the book. And so that the scene towards the end, again, we're talking about it without trying to give anything away,
right?
When Rachel and her mom are talking at the end, I was waiting for somebody to say to me, oh, yeah, that never would really happen. But, of course, it happened all the time with me and my sons and me and my mother, you know. And, in fact, I think that scene ended up working really well because a friend of mine, I had a number of friends read the draft before it was published, and they sort of started, okay, when did you cry in the book? And when did you cry in the book? And one of my friends said, I really cried at that scene with your mom, with Rachel's mom.
Tell us a little bit about it. Give us a little bit of a little tidbit about it without giving it away.
Sure. Well, it's towards the end of the book. Rachel has tried to make amends, and her parents are so furious at her that they don't forgive her right away. It's not the, you know, sugar-coated, sweet, happy ending moment where she says, I'm so sorry I did this. And everybody said, oh, that's okay, Rachel. Everybody's still mad at her. And then a big, bad, sad thing happens in the family that kind of, you know, makes everybody realize, well, even though we don't really forgive Rachel, you know, we still love her. And so she sort of is taken into the fold in that tragic moment. And so they are... Oh, it's hard to talk about it without giving it away, but mom is upset. And so this was a little bit of me and a little bit of a lot of, I think, adult women. You know, when you're upset, what do? You clean. Rachel cleans in the book when she's upset. And her mom goes through all her clothes at the end, and they're sitting on the bed and sort of Rachel's trying to convince her mother not to throw out everything she owns. and her mom says, I think it's time that we talk about everything. And they talk about almost everything, as Rachel says in the narration. I don't tell her all the sordid and illegal details, but but she tells her pretty much everything. And it's that kind of a talk that I used to have with my mother, who's been gone for 21 years, that I actually miss a lot. And I don't have daughters, but I have wonderful sons, and we have those kinds of talks. So.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Deborah Heiligman, author of the book Intentions, for helping us to see that each of us struggles with personal responsibility to live a life dedicated to personal responsibility. Intentions is a mirror of one's own experiences, and it's also a landscape of the unfamiliar world of teenage thinking. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.